Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen, across the airwaves. It's that time again. It's the Breaking It Down podcast, hosted by yours truly, Mark Mancini, out here in Los Angeles. 347-205-9631. 30 minutes goes by quick. If you happen to miss it, catch it on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, as I lay that red carpet down, put that podium in its place, hand off the mic, a great guest I have today, Tim Haggerty, the broadcaster for the El Paso Chihuahuas, a AAA team for the San Diego Padres. Just so blessed to have this gentleman in. First of all, Tim, how are you this morning?
Great. Good to talk to you, Mark.
And let me ask you, if anybody wants to get a hold of you, what would be your contact information? Because with your experience and knowledge, I'm sure a lot of people would want to get in touch with you and even to buy your books.
Thank you. I'm on Twitter at TD Haggerty, and I'm happy to give out my email as well. It's HaggertyTD@gmail.com. And that's Haggerty with one G, so HaggertyTD.
Well, let's get into your books to start it, because I think it's really nice. Your second book is coming out in March. You know, I always say, and I just got done talking to Dave Newhouse, who was with the Oakland Tribune for 47 years, wrote 19 books. And when you write books, first of all, you're putting your life story into these things. But what don't you put in your first book that you carry into the second book or maybe a third book down the line? Because I think it's extraordinary in more ways than one that you can write these books and then you have time to do two, three, four of these things. So take us through the first book and what led into the second book that's being launched next month, my friend.
Thank you. My first book, the idea started in 2004. It was my first job in professional baseball. I was the broadcaster for the Idaho Falls Chuckers, a rookie league team. And so many people would ask me, what is a chucker? Where does that name come from? A chucker is a pheasant-like bird, by the way. And it developed an interest in minor league team names for me. So I looked around for a book, maybe a visual book that showed logos, that showed photos, that gave explanations of minor league team names and where they came from. And it didn't exist. There wasn't a book like that. So that became my hobby the next few years. Went through baseball encyclopedias, went through newspaper archives, found the most unique minor league team names in history, and put together a really visual book and a manuscript. But I had never written a book before, so I didn't know how this document got from my computer into a bookstore. So I actually bought How to Get Your Book Published for Dummies. And it was a great resource. It taught me about how to write a proposal, how to contact publishers, and got a publishing deal. And the book came out in 2012, published by Cider Mill Press. It's called Root for the Home Team, Minor League Baseball's Most Off-the-Wall Team Names. So, yeah, that was more than a decade ago. And when researching that book, I came across this 1880s newspaper article about a Texas League game in Austin that got delayed by a wild bull running on the field. And that's what kind of planted the seed for a book of unique minor league stories. That's what my new book is about. I kind of thought, if I've never heard of this wild bull running on the field, then most fans haven't either. So over the past 10 years, I found 1,001 crazy minor league stories from the past and present. It's the same publisher, Cider Mill Press, and they're really into visual books, Mark. They put together these great illustrations for a lot of these stories, so I have an advanced copy in front of me as we talk. As I flip through, you see a lot of really cool cartoonish images in my new one.
Yeah,
oh, I should say, if people are curious, the new one, you asked me about the new one. It's called Tales from the Dugout, 1001 Humorous, Inspirational, and Wild Anecdotes from Minor League Baseball.
Yeah, and the forwards from Major League Baseball All-Star Billy Butler, that's got to be nice.
Yes, Billy played on that Idaho Falls team, and we've occasionally been in touch over the years. And Billy tells the story about how he was in a minor league game that got delayed by a snake on the field, and we were able to use that as the foreword for the book. He did a great job telling me that story, and we put that together. So you're right. That was a thrill to have him involved, somebody of his accomplishment in the game.
Yeah, and you know what? You can never have enough baseball books because the insight, the knowledge, the expertise, the personal touch, your stories come into the forefront. You know, I remember a guy told me one time, he said, if you've been to one city, you've seen them all. And I disagreed with that because I said every city has a unique thing. Same thing with baseball books. Every book is different in its own way. Any thought about that, my friend?
I agree with you on both your city's comment and your book comment. Throughout the years, there have been books of minor league stories, but there hasn't been one in a long time. There's never been one that packs in 1,001 stories, and there hasn't been one with so many visuals like mine. So I agree with you that every book is unique, and I think that's a strength of this book. I like, you know, the way you phrased it. For this book, I researched many, many sources. I even went to the Baseball Hall of Fame Library in Cooperstown, went through old baseball guides, newspapers, and many baseball books as well. And that was really a fun process of just seeing how many baseball books there have been over the years.
Yeah, amazing. And then your broadcasting career, AAA now with the San Diego Padres, the El Paso Chihuahuas. I talked to you in the pre-chat, prayers and thoughts to the city of El Paso, what they've gone through with the mass shootings and the isolated things and down there. So sending prayers from Los Angeles into your city on that front. But when you look at what's going on, where you started, and I think it's remarkable. I think the next step is the Major League Baseball level, and I think you're really close to get that next job. But, you know, I always tell people, Tim, it's never the goal. They always lose sight of the journey, and the journey is the peaks and valleys to hit the goal. So take us through the steps on how you got to El Paso. And the I guess the bucket list of the school thing is to be a broadcaster in Major League Baseball, which I think you're almost there, and that'll be coming on God's time.
Thank you. I think for most AAA broadcasters, their goal is to keep getting better, keep building contacts, and get a Major League opportunity. I'm very lucky here in El Paso. It's a stunning stadium. I think it's the best stadium in all of the minor leagues. It's only a decade old. The fans are so enthusiastic. They follow the team closely. A lot of people are listening. Personally, feel very fortunate. I think it's the best AAA job. There might be a couple of people out there listening that take exception to that, but it, you know, if it isn't, it's in the top, very, very top of the list. My journey that got here, like I mentioned, my first job was Idaho Falls, 2004, rookie league, great experience there. For three seasons after that, I was the broadcaster for AA Mobile and the Southern League, which was awesome. I grew up in Massachusetts, so just having a chance to go to Idaho and then Alabama, and got an opportunity after that to be one of two Portland Beavers broadcasters, which was the Padres AAA team. I was there 2008 through 2010. And a unique situation happened then where Major League Soccer was bringing an expansion team to Portland, Oregon. And at that time, the soccer team at the minor league level was sharing the AAA baseball stadium with the Portland Beavers. And they converted this stadium into a Major League Soccer stadium. So all of a sudden, in the fall of 2010, the Padres AAA team didn't know where they'd be next year. There was a AAA-capable stadium in Tucson, Arizona. So for the next 3 years, that was where the Padres AAA team played, the Tucson Padres. And I was lucky enough to get to move down there and be the broadcaster there as the long-term future of the team was being sorted out. And at that point, local owners here in El Paso put together a deal to get a new stadium and bring the AAA team here. So I was lucky because those two transitions, Portland to Tucson and Tucson to El Paso, I wasn't guaranteed to get those jobs. Those were new owners both times, but it all worked out. El Paso has become a great home. My wife and I have a young son. It's just a great community full of kind people.
Yeah, and you're coming from Boston. My dad was born in Rosendale. God rest his soul. They lost him about 36 years ago. And when I think of Boston, I think of, wow, the North End, the best Italian food. I also think of the guys that come out of there that play in the National Hockey League. I don't know what's more common in Massachusetts, the Bible or hockey, because they're both a religion. Any thought to that?
Yeah, I grew up in a town called Canton, probably 20 minutes away from the city, and hockey was very big in our town. Myself and my brothers played. I faded before high school, but my two younger brothers are very good high school hockey players. And you're right, there's NHL players from Canton, from my hometown. You know, it's rabid when it comes to the Red Sox, tremendous fan base there. But as far as playing, really some of the best athletes from my town were hockey players and not baseball players.
Yeah. And, you know, in with the minor leagues and getting the opportunity, and I can remember the Padres training in Yuma and, you know, going now into Peoria and stuff like that and building it. When you look at, you know, climbing the ladder and getting to where you are today, a lot of people look at, well, he's a broadcaster here in a great-looking stadium. And, man, that looks like, you know, I can do that. But they don't take into consideration, you know, the working late at night, putting the time in, driving from city to city, sometimes in a beat-up car or anything like that. Are those some of the stories that have been on your adventure to get to where you are today, my friend?
For sure. There's a lot of times that I'm on the air that my body and brain feel really tired. And I never say that on the air because the person who worked construction all day, who's listening to the ball game on his drive home, doesn't care. But, you know, until some recent changes in the Pacific Coast League, AAA baseball travel was pretty grueling, where there were league rules that you had to take the first flight out because they never wanted to have travel delays lead to a postponement of a game. So we would finish a homestand. There's some work to do after the game, updating the team website, that type of thing. Sometimes you might be getting home. I don't know. You're getting to bed at 12:30, and you have to be at the airport at 4:30 a.m., and the next day you're flying to Tacoma. And you are your brain is not firing as fast as you would like it to be on the air. So, I never feel woe is me because I know there are literally hundreds of people that would apply for a job like this. So
right.
I feel very, very lucky. But, to what you're saying, I think kind of personally that's one of the things I work on is sometimes I listen back to recordings and – you know, I'd say for half of the games, I am totally alert and focused and just absolutely on my A game. And I really try to make those other half as good as they can be, try to approach that. So whether that's really looking at my diet or how much sleep I'm getting, I never was like a big drinker, you know, so I'm not going to really do that anymore. And it's not to say that all broadcasters have to do that. I just kind of feel the longer I've done this, the more connected a good broadcast is to how your body feels than I would have thought when I was in my early 20s. I'm 40 now, and it kind of the longer I go, to me, that's just such a big thing about how you do in a broadcast. You know, maybe in your job you feel the same way. It's like, how does your body and your brain feel that day? And that's how you feel good on the air.
Right, and as far as the broadcasting aspect of it goes, who have you emulated to get to where you are today? Has it been a Vin Scully? Has it been a Jack Buck, a Jerry Coleman? You know, the list can go on and on. John Miller. Is there anybody in particular that you've kind of said, you know what, he set the standard. I kind of want to get close to that. I know he's a legend. I could be a legend in my own way, but who was the one guy that stood out that you wanted to be like?
When I was a kid, the Red Sox TV announcer was Sean McDonough, who I thought and still think is great. Strong voice, would broadcast to the scoreboard. And what I mean is if he's telling a funny story, that funny story is happening in either the second inning or if it's happening late, it's happening in an 8-run game. He's not doing it a tie score with the eighth inning, for example. You know, he always met the moment of the game. Even as a kid, I could notice that. And it's funny, I think it's really important in broadcasting not to try to imitate anybody, not to sound like anybody. It's really important to sound yourself. Don't be like a cover band, you know, be your own original voice. But I think that something might have crept in, because all the sports we've had on in my house over the years, my son, who's now 7, a year or two ago, we had an NHL game on, and Sean McDonough was the announcer. And for the only time my son has ever said this, he said, "That guy sounds like you." And it's just so funny that he said that. Out of all the announcers that he's heard in his life, that's the only time he said that, and it was the guy who I listened to the most as a kid. So I guess it shows that naturally we do pick up things when it comes to your inflection or your voice. And I'm not saying I'm as good as him at all, but what I'm saying is naturally maybe some tendencies crept in there. And that's what's great, I think, about these days with the ability to listen to games on your phone or on the computer. When I'm preparing for an El Paso game, oftentimes I do have on a major league game or another minor league game. The teams I like listening to the most, I'm not saying these are the best, but I'm saying the ones that I think emulate what I want to do, those are San Diego, Washington, Oakland, Seattle. AAA Rochester's broadcaster, Josh Wetzel, is a friend and outstanding. I think he's one of the best announcers at any level. So, yeah, I have kind of a rotation of, I'd say, a dozen different teams that I like listening to now.
Yeah, you know what? I like the coin phrase because, you know, opening this show, I get a lot of people that say, I like that way. You lay the red carpet, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic. For the people that haven't heard the El Paso Chihuahua broadcast, take me through a home run call in your own thing, your own, you know, coin phrase or something. What do you like to add to it to get it out there where, wow, I really enjoy that call. I can't wait to hear Tim say that again when somebody else hits a home run. Serve up a gopher bowl. Let's hear another call by Tim on that.
It's so funny that sometimes you'll be at like a barbecue or something and people will say that to you. Give me a home run call. It's like, this, you know, and it inevitably sounds so bad because there's no crowd noise behind you. There's no action behind you. But no, I do think that like your home run calls and your highlight calls are really important these days, maybe even more so than a while ago because of social media. Like the video just appears instantly and so many people will turn on the sound on that online video and want to hear it as well. And with minor league teams these days through MLB TV, there's also a lot of people watching in addition to listening. I mean, we've had highlights and then I'll get a text that say, "Hey, they just showed the highlight and I heard your voice at Petco Park on the speakers before the game, the Padres were doing a minor league recap." So it's like, you know, one moment you're, I don't know, talking to some kid in the Chihuahuas Kids Club and 5 seconds later, your call could be blasting throughout a major league ballpark that night. It's a crazy time to be an announcer. But I try not to say the same thing every time. I think a lot of times I'll say it's gone as the culmination of it. But, you know, a walk-off home run is obviously more dramatic than one in the first inning. So I think it's important for home runs to sound different. You know, we had one, I can send you the audio, 2019, El Paso scored 10 runs in the bottom of the ninth inning and won on a walk-off grand slam by a guy, Esteban Quiroz, who played with the Cubs in the majors last year. And it was just
That's
so
amazing.
Wild that my voice sounded in my head. I thought, did that sound strained? But then when I listened to the clip, it doesn't. I think it sounds good. So, if there's ever a time that, like, you want to be – you're not scared of being accused of being too enthusiastic, it's a play like that, 10-run ninth inning.
Well, you know, it's funny because I produce a show out of Pittsburgh. A doctor, and he's an ear, nose, and throat specialist. So if you ever need something for a soothing throat after broadcasting a lot of games, let me know. And he's got the remedies. He's a great guy, Dr. Greg Roscoe out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And it's amazing. But, yeah, I can imagine, you know, there's some days where, you know, you broadcast, some of these games might go extra innings. Now we've got the Major League Baseball changes. It started in the minor leagues last year. I think it took a month to adjust to the time clock. So you guys got to jump on Major League Baseball, who's going to implement it this year. These crazy changes in baseball, to me, baseball was never meant to have a time clock. I know they're trying to speed up the game in a lot of ways. I talked to Bill Madlock with the whole second base thing. He thinks, it's, you know, this ain't softball. A lot of people have their own differential opinions on this. I will tell you, the bases this year in Major League Baseball look like Domino pizza boxes.
Yeah, and I've seen all those rules except the shift restrictions. We have not had that in the Pacific Coast League yet. But on your first comment on baseball not being designed to have a clock, if this were 2016, I would totally agree with you. I would have said the exact same thing. But right. As the time between balls in play kept growing larger and larger, and the time between pitches grew larger and larger, this is not the game that you or I grew up watching. And what I observed last year, people say that the pitch clocks changed the game. What it actually seems to me is that it brought it back to normal. I know that might sound crazy, but it's not just the time of game. People will say, okay, the average AAA game went down to 2.5 hours instead of 3 hours and 5 minutes. But you're cutting out the 35 most boring minutes. You're cutting out 35 minutes of nothing, where, to me, the big phrase is the pace of the game. If you or your listeners go and pull up a random AAA inning last year, it feels different. There's that rhythm. The pace is restored. And that's why I like using words like restored and brought back to normal. It's abnormal to have three minutes and 45 seconds between balls in play. So right. I think that efforts to get that back to normal are good. And there's definitely going to be some clashes, especially early in the season. But I bet by summertime, I think you'll like it, Mark. Call me up in the summertime. Tell me what you think. I think it'll grow on you.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely. We'll definitely keep in touch on it. And the other thing that seems to be obsolete, and you're hoping they're bringing it back, and now talking to a good friend of mine, Ed Vosburgh, who played 10 years in the majors, a relief pitcher, the pitcher that goes over to first now, if you do it more than 2-3 times, it's considered a balk. Now he gets awarded second base. What happened to the stolen base? What happened to the bunt? Those things that we kind of grew up with and was instrumental in baseball seems to be almost a lost art today.
I'd love to see more stolen bases, and I think we will see slightly more stolen bases this year. The step-off rule is a pitch clock rule. In 2021, they did not have that in AAA, and pitchers recognized when that pitch clock is ticking down, they just stepped off. And they got a reset of the pitch timer. So you had to have a way that pitchers could not game the system and just step off because it made the pitch clock useless.
Right.
So now, you know, and that's an important thing to bring up. If pitchers feel overwhelmed or they have to think about something or they have to take a breath, they can stop the pitch clock. They just have a limited number of times of how they can do it when there's runners on base. I think the bigger bases will have a very small impact. I didn't see much change of anything when those arrived at midseason in 2021. Apparently stolen base attempts went up a little bit, and I know that's MLB's goal, not necessarily the stolen bases, but the stolen base attempts. Bring back more action into the game. And I think with the pitch timer, with today's athletes, I think this is going to be a great version of Major League Baseball. Players are so talented now, and when you can sort of pick up the pace and normalize it a little bit, I think it's going to be a great product.
Yeah. 6 minutes left in this great interview. I wanted to touch on the Oakland A's. I've always said if somebody's going to buy a team, you don't carpetbag it out of a city that's been there so many years, especially putting California on the map with those three titles in a row in the 70s. But it looks like this rich tradition might be heading to Vegas. Any thought on the Oakland A's? For a team to be in a city that long, if somebody's going to buy it, there should be a 20-year plan to keep it in the city before you take it out of town. What's your thoughts on that, my friend?
I just feel for A's fans that the fact that there's even articles about this, that they even have to worry about this. I saw a recent one on Ballpark Digest that said maybe there was some optimism about an A's new stadium in Oakland. So I hope that comes to fruition. And also, the A's AAA team in Las Vegas is in a beautiful, stunning stadium in Summerlin, Nevada. So that's another reason why I hope that Oakland maintains the A's there. I would hate, you know, for any rumors to come up about that Triple-A team. Over the years, we've seen that happen where Major League Baseball expands to a Triple-A city, and the Triple-A city then has to Triple-A team then has to leave that city. That happened in '98 with Phoenix. It happened in the early '90s in Denver, for example. So my hope, Mark, is the A's can figure it out, get a beautiful new stadium in Oakland, and Las Vegas continues to have that great Triple-A ballpark. But we'll see.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I'll throw the last question out. It's the minor league ballparks who I basically think Major League Baseball is looking at and saying, hey, we got to do stuff like this. I can remember going to the old Vegas ballpark, and it would be in the middle of nowhere pretty much, and be like a dust storm, and, you know, you have these cardboard things in the outfield. Now these things are extraordinary. The one in Louisville, yours in El Paso, they're just – I mean, I think Major League Baseball has kind of looked at the minor leagues and saying, hey, wait a minute. Let's start building our stadiums like this. We see it now at PNC Park, Citizens Bank, Petco. Any thought to what's going on with Major League Baseball looking at your minor leagues parks?
Well, some of the ones you mentioned are a good example of this, but if you notice over the past couple of decades, Major League stadiums, the capacities are a little bit smaller. It wasn't like Three Rivers Stadium or Veterans Stadium or Riverfront Stadium where they built those big round stadiums that would seat 50, 60,000 people. A place like PNC Park, I think the capacity is only 37,000 or something.
Yeah.
Where if it's a weeknight and you have a crowd of 18,000, it still feels lively. It still feels packed. And that also has happened in AAA. El Paso, the biggest crowd we've had is around 10,000. And we've actually sold out games. We've actually had to tell people, I'm sorry, please come tomorrow, but we don't have any tickets left because there's such demand for tickets here. Whereas some bigger minor league parks, Portland was like this. Portland, you could pack into 16,000 people, and you might do it once a year. But the problem with that is that on a Monday night, and there's 3,000 people there, it feels empty. Whereas if you pack 3,000 people into a smaller stadium, you still have that energy.
Yeah. And as we wind this thing down, I can't wait to do another interview, talk about mascots, talk about, you know, what they do in the minor leagues as far as entertainment. I've heard of the Savannah Bananas. That's a crazy thing they do out there. I could just imagine some of these minor league things. I'm sure you have a lot of stories. We got to continue this conversation not too far down the line, but I wish you luck. I know the Padres, everybody will be acknowledging them come October. I'm going to throw my hat right in the ring that the Padres will represent the National League. Let everybody know again how they can get that great book and how they can get a hold of you, my good friend.
Thank you. My new book is Tales from the Dugout, 1001 Humorous, Inspirational, and Wild Anecdotes from Minor League Baseball. It'll be in stores in late March, and right now you can order it online on Amazon or anywhere else that they sell books.
Yeah, and as we wind this thing down, I know you'll be down there in Peoria checking out the Padres, and boy, that's going to be fun, spending a few days in Arizona, and just so blessed to do this interview with you, my good brother.
Well, thanks for inviting me, Mark. It was great to meet you.
Thank you very much. That was Tim Haggerty, the broadcaster of the El Paso Chihuahuas. If you get out there, check that thing out. We're going to get him back on again down the line here. Yours truly, Mark Mancini, saying thank you very much for listening to the Breaking It Down podcast. Catch it on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms where you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. Have a good one. Safe weekend. We'll talk to you down the line.